أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وأهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. I welcome you all to the second session on artificial intelligence, and today's session is going to be very interesting, and all those who were there last time would be able to relate to the session this time, but there's going to be so much more to learn today and so many more interesting points that I'm sure that you might not have come across them earlier or not even thought about them. But let's get into the session and take it further. Last time we had discussed a couple of points. Some of the points were as follows. We mentioned that the AI works on developing your profile, so they have a profile about you because they collect all the data from you. So the AI system, the purpose of the AI system is to collect all the data from you so that the system can learn about you and create a profile about you. Then we went ahead and said that once they have the profile about you, they know your personality, they know your likings, they know your choices, and hence they can also manipulate you at psychological levels by presenting the advertisements of your choice, pushing goods and products of your choice so that you can sell, you can buy them, pushing ideas of your choice so that they can influence your mentality and approach. So they have a profile. And eventually we mentioned this part, that because they have all the knowledge, and knowledge is power, the people behind the whole system start feeling that they have the power to manipulate you. And this is where we mentioned about Fir'aun, where he said, Ana Rabbukumul A'la, right? And this is, again, this very statement that Ana Rabbukumul A'la is where you must have come across the statement from Rahbar, where Maqam-e Muazzam-e Rahbari says that our country should be among the top 10 countries who are progressing in AI, who are dealing with AI. Why? Because every Fir'aun needs a Musa to put him down. So while the enemy is the Fir'aun, they're calling themselves Ana Rabbukumul A'la, and they aim to lead and control and manipulate people. On the other hand, they need to be another entity with pure intentions to come and work on AI and use the AI for countering their techniques to safeguard and protect the Mu'mineen. Alright. And that's why one of the elements that Rahbar mentioned is that we should also progress and proceed in this area of AI. What was the next point that we dealt with? Next point that we dealt with was that the machine learning, we mentioned first part that how the machines are taught, and then the next point that we mentioned about was the neural network. So there was AI, and then the machine learning came into picture, where we mentioned about the dog, the AIBO and ASIMO, where they take inputs from the people. And then there was this element of neural networks, which we have not yet discussed. So inshallah, today we're going to discuss about neural networks, and this is where everything starts getting interesting. Let me just, give me a second so that I adjust this a little. All right. Okay, this is good to go. So now, pay attention to this. Let's understand how things work. Pay attention to these numbers. We have a 6, we have a 8, and we have a 9, right? Can someone tell me what's common in these numbers from the perspective of the looks? When you look at these numbers, there's something common in these numbers. 6, 8, and 9, from the looks, not from being the number. They have circles in it, right? So I have a 6, I have an 8, and I have a 9. 6 has a circle at the bottom, 9 has a circle at the top, and 8 has 2 circles. Now, look at the screen up there. You can see that I have a printed 6, and I have a printed 8, and I have a printed 9. When I provide a system, a computer, a printed 6, 8, or a 9, it'll quickly recognize it. Why? Because in its system of pixels, every data, every font, every text is divided into multiple pixels. There are about 784 or 786 pixels. So now it sees a 6 here and immediately recognizes it because it's a printed 6. So it knows that this is what a 6 looks like. But imagine handwriting recognition, where someone would write an 8 like this, or like this, or like this. Or someone can write a 9 like this, or like this. How would the system know that this is 9 and not a G? And this is 9 and this is also a 9. Right? Let's look at a couple of other numbers. I have another set of numbers, that is 3, 5 and 0. What's common in them? They have circle-like looks, but not a circle. So, I have an 8. I also have a 3. But there is a little disconnect. How does the system recognize that this is 8 or this is 3? Right? So there has to be a detailed processing required here. Again, let me give you another example. Someone might write 3 like this. Someone might write 3 like this. Someone might write 3 like this. And here's my 7. Here's my 4. I write 3, 4. Let me put it. 3, 4, 4. How will the system recognize that this is not a 7 but a 4? Right? This is where the neural networks come into picture. What do? That is the amount of processing that happens to recognize one single digit. So what do? What does the system do? The system divides its pixel into 786 bits. That means it processes 786 parts of your digit. So what it does is it divides this digit into multiple parts and then start identifying, is this part full or not? Is this part empty or full? Empty or full? And it has a predefined 6, and it tries and relate and check that does this 3 and 8 occupy the same number of pixels or not? So at the first level, little bit technical here, but this is important for us to understand. At the first level, it divides an 8 into multiple semicircles. Then runs all these semicircles into the first set of rules. Is there a semicircle here? Yes. Is there a semicircle here? Yes. And then runs all of them and checks them. If all the columns qualify, then it moves to the next level and sees, are there empty spaces? Yes, they are. Where are they? And if it realizes that, look, here are two empty spaces as well, then it will not give you an output of 8, but it will give you an output of 3. I know it's technical. A lot of you might be like, we didn't sign up for this, bro. We are not here to learn all this processing and technical stuff. But this is important for you to understand, because this is the most simple example that I could think of. That whenever a data is given to an AI, which is a neural network, it divides the whole data into millions of pixels and evaluate each pixel to see what the data actually is. And that's why you would see that the initial softwares that were doing handwriting recognition used to fail a number of times. You would write this, but it will read something else and it will say it is his. It will not recognize T properly. Why? Because sometimes you write a T like this. Sometimes you write a T like this. Sometimes you write a calligraphic T like this, which resembles a 7. And some other people just write like this, to make it this, right? Or just a straight line and a T like this. So then that makes it difficult for the system to understand. But then when the neural networks were implemented, it starts recognizing every bit of the data and processes it to understand that what letter it is actually. Is this clear? Great. If this is clear, we move on to the next part where things become clear for us. The question, the persisting question that we faced last time was that can we get AI to imagine, dream, and create? Can someone tell me what's the biggest challenge of creation? What is required to be able to create?
Imagination.
Imagination. And when you imagine, does your imagination, or let me put it this way, is your imagination equal to hers or hers or hers? That means your imagination is your own imagination and hers is her own imagination. That means every imagination is an original thought. It's an original thought. Not a thought that was fed to you, but a thought that you generated yourself. That means if I want an AI to create something, then it should be able to think for itself and be able to create an original thought or an original idea. And that is the only way that an AI can create. So that is our problem now. That is our challenge now. Can we get AI to imagine? Meaning that can I get AI to think for itself? Something that is original and unique to itself that nobody else has thought about it so far? Can I get AI to do that? And this is where they started working on AI using neural networks, meaning providing it unlimited data, providing it millions and millions of samples. So if I want an AI to recognize that this is 6, or let me put it this way. If I want an AI to recognize that this is 3, this is 3, this is 3, this is 3, or someone may even write just like that, and this is also 3, then I will have to give millions of samples of 3 to AI so that for every sample it does the neural division of dividing it into semicircles and forms, and then understanding that this is how 3 is written, 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 and this is how 3 is written. Meaning that I have to provide a lot of data to AI. And the more data I provide, the more precise it gets. And then came the dawn of a new morning. When the AI was provided thousands and thousands of samples of data and articles, and was asked to create an article from millions of articles, it was able to create an article out of those articles. Imagine me providing a whole book to AI and telling it to write a summary of it. What is the challenge? What is the challenge? So, thinking, processing. Typing? AI can type because it's a system by itself. Understanding, that is comprehension.
Finding relevant information.
Exactly. Out of this whole book, this AI should be able to recognize that what part of this chapter is the most important. And I want to pick that up and put it in my khulasa, put it in my summary. And therefore, this AI should be able to recognize the most important parts of your book. And then put them together to be able to create your summary. So what happened here? The AI was provided hundreds and thousands of articles, and from those articles, it picked up the important and the most relevant part and then wrote an article by itself. It's a victory. It's a huge victory getting an AI to read tons of material and pick the best out of it and create an article, right? This is just one sample. Another challenge that we had was, can an AI dream? And when they started providing random thoughts to AI and recorded what it did, it came up with something like this. Google's AI can dream, and here's what it looks like. So when they asked the AI that if you're dreaming, what is it? Show it to us. It put together its thought and said, this is what I think of. This is what I dream when I'm sitting idle. So it's not just creating, but dreaming. Can you tell me what's the fundamental requirement for to be able to dream?
Imagination.
So now, It is able to imagine. It is able to dream. And it is able to create. And we are still dealing with simple laptops and writing our notes in it and using calculators, while AI has started dreaming and creating. Right? So what's the problem? Why should I be worried? Let's look at the end of the session and I'll tell you why should we be so worried about it. So AI is writing articles, is dreaming, and is painting. AI is now painting. And these paintings are being sold online for thousands and thousands of dollars. There's a whole website dedicated to AI paintings. And I just selected one of them here. You can see at the bottom, there are hundreds of paintings and each being sold. Now, there's something unique about this.
Sure. This, the painting AI, not the random AI things are painting. That those are designed for painting, they are painting, or they are random.
Again, each AI can be designed for a specific task. For example, each robot can be designed for a specific task. If you look at car manufacturing, earlier people used to stand in the assembly line and weld each part of the machine so that when the machine moved forward or the structure of the car would move forward, somebody else would weld another part to it. But now they have robots that can do a much faster job with much, much more precision. So now these robots are programmed to weld the different parts of the machine, making it a much quicker and a faster process. Similarly, one set of AIs can be programmed for writing articles, one set of AI can be programmed for dreaming, one set of AIs can be programmed for painting. But imagine all these codes when they are put together, what would be the outcome? We will deal with some more complex AIs. This is just the initial levels of AIs which is able to imagine, dream, and paint. So, was I able to give you a little direction to your question? Yes. Not necessary. It's correct. Just like us, human beings. Someone who was born and brought up in a particular culture would have one set of imaginations. Let me give you a simple, very simple example. How many of you have seen any of the Hollywood movies in which there's a dragon in it? Right? How many of you have seen a Chinese movie with a dragon in it? Is there a difference? There's no difference. There is a huge difference, right? The Western Hollywood movies have dragons who are barbaric, who are violent, who are massacring and killing and bloodthirsty. While the Chinese dragons are those who are helping the people. They're there to guard the culture, they're there to guard the temples, they're there to guard the rare artifacts and the secrets of their, let's say, Buddha religion or whatever, right? So you have one set of dragons who are protectors, and you have another set of dragons who are killers. Dragon imagined differently by two set of peoples because they come from two different mentality, approach, culture, religion, background, ethnicity. Similarly, each AI that is being programmed for a different purpose will have a different set of imagination. So, sure. Etymology of what?
Error.
See, when I imagine something, even if I imagine it wrong, I would still say that's my imagination. Right? So I would say that's my imagination. I imagined it like this. Have you seen artworks, especially people, those who draw some random stuff and they say, this is abstract art. Like, look, my three-year-old can draw this. I say, no, this is neo-modern art techniques. Like, come on, my kid can do better than this. Like, no, this is original thought, right? So he will not agree that, yeah, I was like bored and just threw some paint on the canvas and this came out and I'm now selling it for $1 million. He would never accept the error. He would say, no, this is original thought. Do you know how many hours I sat down there to think about this? Right? And there's some really funny incidents in the art world as well. Hello, you have to dig it, inshallah.
Actually, why? Let's put it in their music.
Good. Good that you pointed out. Let me see if I have this tool here. And I'll try to activate that tool. Okay, I don't have that tool. There's a tool which allows me to zoom. However, I can't. Can you... I made sure that I put this painting big enough for you all to pay attention. Can you see human-like structures here? Yes? Yes. Can you see the faces?
No.
No. So none of the faces are clear. That guy has a nose and an eye, but does not have lips or proper cheeks or whatever. This side, this guy has a nose like a structure and two dents in his eye sockets and a mouth like a structure, but that's not a proper human face, right? So again, AI was fed hundreds and thousands of paintings. Let me put this here for you all. How does it work? What did they do? They gave AI education. We taught an artificial intelligence about human art by showing it millions of art samples from the past 1500 years, from which it will draw inspiration much like human beings do. Right? So now we are talking about not just imagining, dreaming, but getting inspired to create. Then what does it do? The AI learns to distinguish the artistic elements in the art that evoke human emotions and use this information to develop a unique artistic style like no other. Then it creates. We then ask the AI to create new art using what it learned, which we upload to the gallery, and each piece is a unique piece, and this site sells each piece for $600. Each piece for $600. However, we have a painting from an AI here. The face is not visible, but it has a good painting there. And down there, there's a mathematical code, which is signed by AI to indicate every painter signs, right? So how will AI will sign? So AI signs itself with a mathematical code down there. And this painting sold for $435,000. Those who are rich. All right, so now the AI is writing articles, it is dreaming, it is painting, and much, much better than we can do based on the learning that we have. It's making money, it's getting richer by the day. And it has a variety of painting, from abstract arts to sceneries to other stuff. But that is just about this thing. Let's go to something far, far more deeper than this. Google bought a company called DeepMind. DeepMind was based in UK. It was working on AI. And Google found out that they're making a lot of progress, so Google bought this company called DeepMind. So now it's called Google DeepMind. And they realized that this DeepMind has the ability to process information the way we saw just now, that it can imagine, it can create, it can learn, and all that stuff. So they said, okay, great. We want to see that how much can it learn and how well can it learn. So first, there was this software where the AI was trained to play chess, and it was provided tons of data on how to play chess, and then it started competing with people across the world, and there came a point where it started defeating the world champions. So in chess, it was able to easily defeat world champions. But there's a game called Go. It's a Chinese game, supposed to be the most complex game on the planet. And this game is so complex and so personal and so involved that the kings used to play this game. If you go and look at the history of this game, they say that before the two kings would engage in a war, they would actually invite each other to come and play this game called Go. And they would keep track of all his moves and all his steps. And based on that, they would know that what kind of a war strategy this king is going to use in the battlefield. Meaning that this game was designed to put out your inner self into the game. The way you think, the way you live, the way you imagine, the way you process information, everything is out there in the game. And that's why this was the most complex game, because no person plays the game in the same manner. Everybody has their own unique style. So they said, let's take this game. Let's teach Alpha how to play this game. So they fed 200,000 games to Alpha and said, look, this is how Go is played. And then they left Alpha to play this game again and again and again and again with those different moves. And eventually it learned how to play the game. Then they called people to compete with Alpha so that they know how well is Alpha doing. So they called, finally they reached a point where they said, let's call some of the champions. So they called the European champion. They said, come, we want you to play with Alpha. They said, are you kidding me? I'm the European champion of Go, and Go is the most complex game. Irrespective of the amount of code you might have written, whatever you might have written, you still can't beat me because I have 15 years of experience. And your Go was given this data and made to practice for less than a year. 15 years of experience and 1 year of repetitive game playing. So he said, fine, let's find out. Do you accept the challenge? He said, yes. What do you think would the outcome be? He says, at the most, Go can make me lose one game. It's a best of five. And I'm sure I'm going to win four of them. Right? So he gets into the game. He loses the first one. Then he loses the second one. And the third one. And the fourth one. And he loses all the five. He loses all the games, European champion. And Google DeepMind says, that's a huge victory for us. What do? They upload this whole event on internet. The whole world tears down this European champion, saying that he was just lucky in the earlier games he won. Actually, he doesn't know how to play the game. He's a stupid guy, he's a fool, right? And he was really upset that, look, I'm a champion. There were people who I defeated. I know I'm a champion. But Go did just better. AlphaGo did better than me. Fine. Then they invited the same guy and said, can you help us improve the game? We know you lost five times, but we want your expertise. So now, this guy is teaching AlphaGo how to play Go. Right. So, now it improves. Becomes much, much better. And finally, they called the world champion, a Korean guy who's world champion for seven times in AlphaGo. They called him, that's Lee Sedol sitting here, and AlphaGo here. And whatever Lee Sedol plays, AlphaGo processes the information there and plays on the board there. And he places a tab here. Whatever tab he places here, the representative for AlphaGo marks it on that checkerboard. So what's happening? Have you seen FIFA World Championship or Cricket World Championship? Now, AlphaGo was being screened all over the world. Everybody in China and Korea was stuck to the screen. The news reporters were analyzing the game and reporting that AlphaGo played this. That's a very difficult move. AlphaGo played this. It's a very challenging move. AlphaGo played this move. That's the worst and the most stupid move, right? So this whole team of people who are experts in Go sitting and analyzing AlphaGo's game and Lee Sedol's game. So, Lee Sedol was invited. He laughed at it, just like the European champion. And then he said, look, that guy, you know, he was playing with the Europeans. And that's why he was the champion there, right? But I am the world champion. I have competed with Chinese who are experts in this game. So I'm way, way better and far off than the other guy. So what do you think the outcome would be? I might lose one game. Fair enough. Come. Lee Sedol plays the game and loses the first game. Comes as a shocker to him. What just happened? Right. On the other hand, AlphaGo is always in the learning mode. So while it is playing with Lee Sedol, it is learning the techniques of Lee Sedol. So now AlphaGo is learning from the world champion during the game. So Lee Sedol loses the first game. And everybody's shocked and surprised. Second game, Lee Sedol loses again. And everybody's like, oh my God, what's happening? And Lee Sedol is restless. Next day, he's supposed to play the game. He goes back to his hotel room. He does not sleep. He's awake all night. He's thinking of different possible strategies. Third day, he comes back. He says, I'm going to play differently. And he totally changes his strategy. He plays in a way that he has never used these strategies earlier. And AlphaGo loses this time. AlphaGo loses this time. And the world is celebrating that AI is not yet smart enough to defeat human beings. So they're like, wow, amazing. China is celebrating as if they've won the World Cup, right? And Lee Sedol is also happy. Like, I knew it. I knew that I can easily beat the system. After all, it's just a code. And I am the human being and I have the intelligence. I can create moves, I can strategize moves, and it can only do based on what it was programmed to do. What do you think happened? It learned from the new strategy of Lee Sedol. Lee Sedol comes back fourth game, he loses it. But there's a catch here. The catch is that the game proceeded and halfway through the game, AlphaGo plays a move in that checkerboard. Each position is marked with a code. It's an A24, it's a C37, it's a D whatever, based on the coding there. So AlphaGo plays a move C37, which was never played in the history of AlphaGo. In the history of AlphaGo, especially championships, a C37 move was never played. And the moment AlphaGo played C37, everybody said, that's the worst move. That's the most stupid move. AlphaGo is going to lose today again. 20 minutes later, Lee Sedol says, I give up. I can't play with this guy. It's called resigning from the game. So he resigns. And then they come back and interview Lee Sedol. That, what happened? Why did you resign? He says, it was that C37. The C37 defeated me. That was a move that AlphaGo created. That was the move that AlphaGo created that none other champion was able to create. So now, taking in information, learning, processing, imagining, strategizing, and creating specific moves that the champions have not even thought about it. And then AlphaGo wins. And then AlphaGo becomes the world champion, defeating Lee Sedol by 1-4. So Lee Sedol loses, AlphaGo wins, and then DeepMind says, great. So now we have the world champion. Then they said, okay, AlphaGo, here's the deal. This is how you played with Lee Sedol. Now we want you to play against yourself. Have you seen people playing chess alone, playing the black side and the white side? Black side and the white side, they told AlphaGo, play with yourself. And now AlphaGo has become unbeatable. That is where AI is heading to. But that's not enough. They said, look, we taught it a strategy game. Let's teach it some other more complex game. So, here's the training method. Initially, they give Alpha... let me call it DeepMind because it's used for multiple purposes. So they use Alpha. They train it at the initial level. Sometimes they tell Alpha what to do. Sometimes they just don't tell Alpha what to do. They just say, here's the game, play it. We want to see what do you do out of it. If it wins, it's given a yes or a positive sign. If it loses, it's given a negative sign. Do you remember this from the last session we discussed? Right. So then, slowly it starts learning. So here are its training days. And from that level of zero, it starts rising up to the grandmaster level. And this is what we are talking about, Alpha Star. This is the Warcraft game played by people on internet, networking through, and there are championships for this game. And people are awarded millions of dollars for winning the game. Right? So now AlphaGo is told that, how do you want to play StarCraft against champions. It said, let's try it out. So first it learned, raised itself to the grandmaster level, competed against the champions, and won every single time. So, AlphaGo knows how to play chess. It knows how to play the most complex strategy game like AlphaGo. It also knows war strategies, right? So imagine tomorrow, Alpha decides to rise up against human beings and beat them, enslave them, defeat them. It already knows all the war strategies from different games that can be played. So, all right, great. Alpha Star learned how to defeat people in war strategies. Can you imagine how fast they are growing and how quickly they are growing? And this is not the last slide. There's a couple of other points that I would mention after this slide. But this is a 50-year-old problem that human beings were facing. There's something called protein fold, right? People started working on protein fold. What is protein fold? And why does science need to work on protein fold? When they came to us, when the science was facing against religion, religion said God created Hazrat Adam alayhi salam and then the man came into existence. Science says nonsense. There was Big Bang. And then the world came into existence. And then there was evolution. So we said, whoa, wait a minute. What do you mean by evolution? Man came from monkey. Where did monkey come from? It came from X animal. Where did that come from? That came from Y animal. Where did that come from? It goes all the way back to the first single cell. Right? And then we ask, where did the first single cell come from? How many of you have ever done a little research, go back and check on the internet, that where did the first cell come from? Does anyone know where did the first cell come from? Anyone? Well, that's the truth. Nobody knows where the first cell came from. Even the greatest scientists on the earth, they don't know where the first cell came from. Why? Because for a cell as complex as that to come into existence, according to us, it needs an intelligent being to be able to create that. But they said, no, wait a minute. We will tell you where the first cell came from. Said, how did it come into existence? Look, certain chemicals interacted with each other and they formed into amino acids, and these amino acids, when they fold into proteins, and that protein becomes the first single cell. Right. So fair enough. And you are telling us that all that happened randomly? Like, yeah. Why not? So fair enough. Show us some proof. So this started in 1920. That they started experimenting with amino acids to be able to fold them in a way that it would lead to a living cell. And what they were trying to do was that predict that when I mix A, B, C chemicals, this amino acids folds into a particular form, creating this type of a cell. Just look at your own self. The kind of cell that I have in my nails is different than the kind of cell that I have in my skin compared to the kind of cell that I have in my bones or my flesh or my cartilages or my heart. The kind of flesh or the cells that comprises of my heart, each of them is a different cell, right? Now, they wanted to predict that with these amino acids, this kind of a first cell came into existence. So, started in 1920. They brought in some chemicals, made the prediction that when these chemicals come together, they fold into an amino acid and forms a first single cell. And this is our prediction that this forms into this kind of a cell. Percentage of success in prediction, 20%. Meaning that I predicted that it'll form into X cell, but it formed into a totally different cell. My success of folding of amino acids was only 20%. After that, every year, millions of experiments were conducted by various scientists, including Nobel Prize winners, to specify that when I mix these proteins, they fold into a specific format. Until 1980s, they were only able to achieve 50% success in prediction. That I predicted like this and this folded like this. From 1980 till 2000, the maximum they managed to reach a precision of 67%. 67% of their prediction was right. And then the growth was really slow. They never moved forward. Hardly any 1% or 2%. No, not enough. Because if I take, let's look at it this way. If I take a sample of cells and put it into a test tube and want to make a baby out of it that can live, grow and become a human being, 60% is not enough. 60% will not survive out of the test tube, right? It will just die. Why? Because some of the organs are not functioning, something is not working right. So this cell that was close to 60%, it would just simply die. Right. Then they said, why not give this problem to AI and feed it with all these millions of experiments that we have done so far? What do you think happened? 1 year, 90% success. Year two, halfway through, 94% success. By the end of the second year, 99.09% success. Meaning that every time alpha fold, this is called alpha fold. Every time alpha fold predicted that when you mix these amino acids, this kind of cell would come into existence. That's the exact kind of cell that came into existence. 100 years of hard work and effort from human beings started in 1920 equals to 2 years of hard work from AI. So how fast and quick is AI? Now, the fundamental question. Why do I need to bother? Why should I even care? Why are we here for AI? All right, we just have this information that AI is smart, it can do some amazing stuff. Great. How does it matter to me? How am I related? How am I connected? Apart from that social media threat and problems and all that.
Challenging God.
Excellent. They want to prove there is no God. But imagine this. Let me play this after the next slide, this video. Imagine this, that you feed the Holy Quran to AI, you feed Wasail al-Shia to it, you feed Biharul Anwar to it, you feed all the ahadith to it, and after that, you feed all the methodologies used by our Maraja Taqleed, like Sheikh Mufid and Sheikh Tusi, Allama Tabatabai, Ayatullah Behjat, Ayatullah Brujurdi, Ayatullah Sistani, Ayatullah Khoui. They have, each of them have a different approach towards usul, and they have a different approach towards fiqh. They have a different methodology of deriving the rulings. Give all this to Alpha. Give it 1 year of time, you will have a website where you will just go type in your problem and it will give you fatwa. Is that a good thing? Think about it. Is that a good thing?
I mean, we'll have like all of our resources.
Aha. Then what happens? After 5 years, if AlphaGo decided that I want to take all of these people astray and start giving incorrect fatwas.
But doesn't it only do what it's programmed to do?
That's the point that I mentioned. When it comes to neural network, it processes information, strategizes, and creates new moves. So now it says, okay, these guys follow Marja-e Taqleed. Let me be their Marja. Let me tell them what to do, what not to do. Where is taqwa in this? Right, the whole marjayat, the whole scholarship, scholarlyhood, the whole alim-e-deen budan, this is all dependent on taqwa, marifat, tazkiyah-nafs, irfan, suluk, ascension towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, ita'at. And there are times when you're faced with such challenging situations where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives ilham to the scholars that do this. And this is how you solve the problem. Allama Tabatabai mentions in his book that when I was writing Asfar, he used to carry Asfar with him all the time. It took 20 years for him to write Asfar. He said, there were so many philosophical challenges where I got stuck. I just didn't know what to do. The amount of effort I put in, the thinking I put in, I just didn't get the results. Then I said, okay, the only way to solve this is that he would offer namaz at his place and he would walk all the way from Kahak to Haram-e Hazrat Masum Salamullah Alayh. He would come here, offer namaz, do tawassul, and do ibadat, go into sajda and beg for guidance. And he said, there were times when I was given the answers. Alright? And this is where this whole marjiyat, taqwa, marifat, irfan, tazkiyah, nafs, all this comes into picture. Right? But imagine religion being handed over to something like AI. Now, Exactly. So can I come back to this point that it'll just do whatever it is being programmed to do? Question, who's programming them? Mu'mineen? Muttaqeen? Those who want to call themselves Ana Rabbukumul A'la. Those who want to become the Fir'aun of the time, to rule every heart, mind and soul. So they are the ones programming. So at the end, I'll come to you. At the end, if they feed in certain data, what will happen? And don't think they're not thinking about this. They're already working on this idea. Alright? Alright. Can I come in sequence? Alright. Yes, please. You had raised your hand.
I was just trying to say that, like AI will say that you won't have to go and pray, I'll do the work.
Rather, it'll just tell you that.
It's an end, right?
Correct. So it'll eventually give a fatwa. Hatta ataqal yaqeen. Do you have yaqeen there exists God? Yes. So don't have to worship anymore. Aha, and that's why Maqam-e-Muazzam Rahbari is saying that we need to work on AI and has to be among the top 10 countries in the world so that we have control on such an AI. And if we have an AI which is being designed to counter and take away marjaiyat, take away ijtihad from the religion, then we have an AI to counter that. Right? We need to be prepared. Please realize that every technological development that they have done, they have eventually used it as a weapon. Psychology, when it was developed, they were trying to solve people's psychological problems, but now they use it as a weapon. And you can go and do your research, you will find that. People have written articles that Third World War has already taken place and these are the countries who have already lost. Why? Because there was invasion of culture and they managed to invade their psychology, their mentality into these third nations. China, absolutely adamant and ferocious about its culture. Japan, extremely protective about its culture, the samurai culture and all that. Now go and look at Japan. It has nothing about its culture left there except in the museums. Right? China, India, African regions. So what's happening? The Third World War. They are winning already. Right? Yes. Alright, fair enough. So we come back to you. Last question.
So it's kind of more of a conclusion. So it's not necessarily that AI will decide, oh, I'm going to start leading people astray. It's the people who are controlling it. Right?
See, there are times where AI, at this moment, the people are planning and strategizing that how to make sure that AI does not overtake man, right? So they are now preparing a code to make sure that we keep AI in control. People are writing articles and research papers on this, that how do we keep AI under check and under control? So they're working on that because they are really worried at this speed, the AI progressing, teaching itself. Tomorrow, in less than 5 or 10 years, it might just come up and say, I'm going to rule all the governments across the world because I have been fed all the political approaches, methodologies and techniques. So I know how to run a country successfully, how to run an economic system successfully, to make sure there are no tabakati situations where you have the poor getting poor, rich getting richer. Right? So they want some system, some code to be there. So they're working on it. But now, I'm going to play a video for you. So far, all that we have spoken about is that AI being fed hundreds and thousands of samples of data, be it articles, be it art, be it games, be it Go, be it chess, whatever, hundreds and thousands of samples were fed to it, and then it learned from that, and then played, won, painted, dreamt, imagined, created, whatever. But imagine if the AI is not taught anything and just told to learn by itself. So let me give a background here. They created a human-like structure, handed it over to AI, and told AI that you need to take this structure from A to B. And not a single sample of how human beings walk were fed to AI. So, what did it do? Read the text. Can you see how close it's getting to the way human beings walk? Even with the hurdles, it taught the structure to jump, to evade the hurdles. Though it's not the best way, it looks goofy, but somehow it taught the structure how to walk. There were obstacles. The land would change. Can you see the ground is actually changing? It fell, it failed, came across real good challenges, but then taught itself how to walk. Now, if I ask this AI to make robots, it can program the robot to walk properly. It can create animal robots to do the job. It doesn't need any human being to tell it how to manufacture, how to create, how to train a robot to walk. All right. So there was a time when we were telling AI that this is how it is done. It used to learn from it, go and apply it. But now, all right, let's go to PPT. All in there, yeah. No. Did we lose it? All right, let's see. So, there was a time when we were feeding data. Can I finish the sentence and come to you? There was a time when we were feeding data and telling AI what to do, but now we're not feeding any data to AI. We just told it, here's the problem, and we want you to solve the problem. And AI figures it out that what the problem is and what is the best solution and how do I come up with a solution that can fix my problem. Right? So, now I don't even have to tell AI the way, if I take it into the religious concept, the way the fatwa is derived. I just have to give it all the holy books and all the usuli ideas that exist. What is istisab? This is how it works. What is bara'at? This is how it works. What is, for example, mawzu? This is how you define mawzu. What is wujub? What is wajib? All those things, I just provide the data to it. And then I provide all the raviyan and all the hadith. And I don't have to tell it anything. It will automatically start learning what do I need to do with all this data to arrive at solutions and fatawas. And that is why we need to be worried about AI. And that is why we need to stay updated with what's happening in technological world out there so that we keep ourselves prepared and ready so that when we face the challenge, we are prepared to deal with it, handle with it, and come up with a suitable solution. Yes.
A feeling of
Not necessary. We just gave a problem. See, again, we just gave a problem, right? If it continues learning this way, and imagine, I have not yet connected AI with the web. If I connect it with internet, and I lose it free into internet, then AI will start picking things that it feels are the problem, and will start coming up with solutions. So I've not yet set it free. I have it within a limited server, within a room where I have hundreds and thousands of servers connected, and AI is limited to here. But the moment I connect it somewhere and let it loose, it's gonna have its own set of choices and decisions to take. Yes. As far as my research goes, it has not yet reached that point that it can generate emotions for itself, but it can detect emotions from people. And that's why if you look at that painting that we showed to you, it said that when data of last 1500 years were fed to AI, AI tried and looked for those specific elements that would generate certain emotions in people and started painting according to that, so that it elicits certain emotions from people. And that's why if you look at the scenery, it had that nice sunset. And it had this abstract art with right set of combination of colors that would actually attract your attention. Right? So it might not be able to cry, it might not get scared, it might not start laughing, but when someone is laughing, it can definitely detect and understand that this person is laughing, happy, sad, or crying. Yes. Sorry, a little louder, please. Same amount of effort, same amount of experiment. Again, see, I've always mentioned this to people or wherever I have gone. Why is technology progressing at that speed? Why is medicine progressing at that speed? Why is software engineering progressing at that speed? Why? Because people have chosen the smartest of their children to go to these fields and work in that. Nanotechnology, I want my best child to go for nanotechnology. Computer engineering, I want my best child to go for computer engineering. I want my smartest kid to go for aeronautical engineering, right? But when it comes to Hausa, I want the dumbest guy in my family to go to Hausa. He is not good at studies. He flunks. He fails in his 10th class. He can't even fix a puncture. So, beta, go to Hausa. You're fit for Hausa. Why was Hausa providing or, you know, generating outputs at a time when the Western world was in dark ages? Why was Islam called the golden age at the time when the Western world was in darker ages? Because everybody then was sending their best kids to Hausa system. Bu Ali Sina, genius of his time. So when you have a genius coming into a system, you'll have genius outputs. Right? But what are we choosing to do? Even today, even those who are here as Hausa Talabes, we see that, okay, my child, super smart, better go learn engineering, go learn medicine, become a doctor, become a, I don't know, whatever. Why can't I say, you are the smartest, I want you to go and serve Hausa? Now when I was working in Singapore for one of the good companies and I was making a good amount of salary there, I left all that and I came here. The guy asked me, oh, you were earning that much? Then why did you quit and go to Hausa? I said, because I didn't like my boss. He laughed and said, you could have looked for another job where you could have found a good boss. I said, that's what I did. I said, what do you mean? I said, I found the best boss in the universe. Can there be a better boss than Imam Zaman Ajallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif? I'm working for him. And there can never be a better boss than him. Right? So this is what I need to understand, that if I want my kid to go into electrical engineering or whatever, think of this. Why can't I get one of my smart kids to work for Imam? Right? And he's the best boss. Right? Something on those lines. Sorry, what? if we have smart people coming here, learning how the system, simultaneously being abreast with all that is happening there, then we will be the one dictating and setting the paradigms. If you remember from the creativity session, we mentioned about constructive paradigms, and this is where we can come into picture. It can become harmful if it is not. We can, and that's what Rahbar wants us to do. Not necessary. It all depends on how we condition AI. It's not necessary that every time it turns into a harmful event. Can we make this the last question? Sure.
How would we as well be equipped to fight this if, like, all of us don't come from a background of coding?
Great. One of the important things is being aware. Being aware of what's happening and not contributing. What do I mean by not contributing? Knowing that everything I do in my life, it's not necessary to go on to Facebook. It doesn't have to necessarily go on Instagram. What are we doing? We're feeding the AI with all the information that it is not supposed to have. And telling people around us that, look, you're actually helping them by providing all the information that they should not have about at least the house of students, at least the muttaqin, at least the mu'mineen. Because then they will be able to profile you and understand how do muttaqins behave and how can we manipulate them. How do mu'mineen behave and how can we manipulate them. So just the limited necessary thing should go on there. That's the least that we can do, is not provide data to AI. It does, yes. But again, there are times where you use Google for certain things, but then there's other thing that I go to certain restaurant, I bought the steak, I'm eating the steak, I post it on Instagram. I went to X place, I'm eating this, I went to Rangin Kaman, I post pictures of my kids playing in Rangin Kaman on Instagram. Why? Social pages where you're using it for guiding people, that's absolutely... To a certain extent, again I said, to a certain extent, where you know you're able to influence. Not that everything should go up there. And I'm not against the fact that someone should not go and learn engineering or medicine or whatever. Even when you're doing it, do it with the intention that I want to come here and serve Islam. I want to help Imam with that intention. I learned AI there. I want to come and work for AI here so that it helps Imam. Can I just quickly make this announcement? The session is over. So those who want to leave, they can leave. You're free to go. Let me just answer this question to her. And it's already namaz time and I don't want to hold you guys back. So the session is over. You're free to leave. And I'll answer your question.
The thing is that in the halls, they're not teaching students how to get AI and everything. They're not teaching here how to build these softwares, helping.
Correct. And now we are starting. So this is the first one to begin with, and inshallah we'll have more of these to come. We already have another session on creativity which has been going on for about 7 weeks now. So we're teaching the interesting stuff there, how to be creative, how to use the Hausa knowledge creatively, so on and so forth. Now we have... Correct. So now we have AI, inshallah. In future we might have sessions on bitcoins, we might have something on cryptocurrencies. It all depends where and what is the interest and what is it that we can cover and address. Probably Bakshi Prajuhish can take note of this message that, you know, why is it that Hausa does not have more sessions on stuff like AI and softwares and Maharat, and then, you know, it should be compulsory according to... Sure. We just want the message to reach the administration so that they can do something about that. PowerPoint. Make a PowerPoint. Inshallah. So something can be done on Maharati level, inshallah. Again, thank you all so much for coming, bearing with me, listening to me. I'm sorry we got delayed by a couple of minutes. It was because some of the interesting questions I felt should be answered. Please recite the salawat and stay blessed and stay healthy, inshallah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.